Ruth, hello. Welcome to the show. Long time no see.
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to chat.
How are you doing? How have things been?
Good, man. Yeah, I mean, I know that's like the most surface level answer I can give, but things have been good. We're getting into spring here in Minnesota, kind of a little bit. We're getting hints of it. So I'm, thawing out a little bit and feeling ready for some warmer weather.
What are some, it's funny, I get every so often I'll go through periods where I do like a lot of solo episodes, and then I'm like, all right, let me get like a lot of good guests on. And then I'm like, all right, let me do some solo episodes. And when I'm getting excited about, having more guests on, I'll ask, my audience and people like, oh, you should have Ruth on. And like, this happens every time. I'm like, we're on like 300 episodes. Like most of the people that are being recommended, I'm like, we have an episode, but then I'm thinking like that we should talk again. And it's been almost 4 years. I went back and I was like, oh, it's been, it was a couple of years ago for sure. It was like 4 years ago we did that podcast. Is that insane?
That is wild. No, when you said that, I was like, there's actually no way. I thought you were exaggerating. Until this very moment, I thought you were just exaggerating a little. So that's wild.
Yeah, no, it's literally 4 years ago. Crazy, crazy. What, if anything, I know we're going to talk, we have some topics for today, but just what's changed about your business, about what you're doing these days since the last time we talked?
Oh my gosh, since 4 years ago? Oh boy, let me think. So about my business, I am still doing one-on-one coaching. I am still running my training program, Built to Last. I have a new nutrition program called Total Recomp. So have leaned into a little bit more of like group offers, I would say, in the past 4 years. In terms of what else has changed in life, not a whole ton, to be honest. I am still living in Minnesota, still happily married. yeah. And I would say, I mean, things have changed in my mindset, and we're going to talk, like you said, we're going to talk about this a little bit more in terms of like practices and fitness and nutrition related, but in terms of where I am in life and where I am in the world and like where the business has evolved, but my day-to-day looks similar in that I have the same job because I have loved my job for years and years and years. I have somewhat of a similar routine because I have loved fitness for years and years and years. Yeah, so that's kind of some of the things that have transitioned a little bit.
What do you like most about the group kind of offer?
Ooh, I think people can learn a ton from watching other people be coached. And I love that about group coaching. I love that from both a training perspective and from a nutrition perspective. And I see it all the time. Like, not everyone submits for form reviews, for example, in my group training program, but the people who don't, we just did a big survey in my group training program and multiple responses of people who are like, because I was asking them, what do you use of the membership? What do you not use? Quite a few people don't use the form reviews. There's like our core, the ones who use it and use it and use it kind of every week, or they use it more frequently. And then there's a lot of people who don't, but they watch the form reviews. They watch like my responses to other people, and they will pick and choose like, oh man, I'm struggling with that lift too. Let me go and see what they're struggling with. Oh, that's similar to me. I'm going to watch her response. So you can learn a lot from watching other people be coached. And I just think that's a really cool element. And it feels less alone. I think you feel less alone in that sort of a container as well.
I'm chuckling thinking about the person who will message me occasionally and say, Jordan, are all the form videos visible to everyone? And they'll say, hey, can everyone see them? And I will tell them, don't worry, nobody's looking. And then you're here being like, hey man, like a lot of people are watching. No, it's like, but in a funny way, I think it's both. I think in some ways, first of all, what's definitely not happening is that people are watching your form videos you submit and judging you and talking shit about you and commenting mean things. That's definitely not happening. And so like whether or not like people are watching in their own time and like you said, taking something positive from it, I think that's definitely true. I definitely true. And I see some of the same use. I can think of the usual suspects in my group who are commenting maybe more on their friends, videos that they see come in. And yeah, there's this huge opportunity of like, you might not be a form video person, but there's stuff to learn from the comments I'm making on the exercises that you're doing that somebody else is sending in. So I love that as well. Do you find the programming side of things to be, How do you find, I'll ask it more open-ended, programming for an individual versus programming for the group. Can you describe how you feel about the difference between those two things?
How I feel about the difference.
Yeah, like what do you feel the differences are, and do you prefer one
Yeah.
over the other?
I like both, to be honest. I think they provide different challenges, right? As a group, you have to be thinking about a lot of different people. You have to be thinking about a lot of different swaps, a lot of different experience levels, a lot of different equipment availability, right? So that's like the puzzle. I like the puzzle of programming in general. So that's the puzzle with group programming. With one-on-one programming, the puzzle is more like, how are we going to get this person to grow this exact division of their delts they want to grow, and really optimize in that way? And that's more of the puzzle. Now, there's definitely still some of that, a lot of that truly in group programming too, because I program for only women and really promote my program as a women's lifting program. It's really geared towards women's physique. So absolutely there are things like glutes and delts, arms that we're leaning towards, and I'm still programming a lot, allocating more volume towards those things than others. So there's still that. But I would say that little piece of like the puzzle changes a little bit, whether you're programming for one-on-one or programming for a group. Do you find the same?
I definitely find the same. Like you said, I like both. I think with one person, you can go deeper into their preferences. You can go deeper into their equipment availability. You can go deeper into, certain explanations that require a bit more back and forth from a learning perspective. And that doesn't mean we do no, that doesn't mean we dumb things down in a group setting, but there's a certain level you just, it would be bad from a business perspective to say, hey, we're going to do this super hyper intricate thing that's going to take weeks for us to figure out. In a group setting where you have a little bit less chance to work with each person individually. But yeah, I don't know if I like one more than the other, but I have found over the last few years that I'm the puzzle of the group setting to be just intellectually very stimulating, where it's like I need to think about, my average customer, but I also need to be thinking about the person who's maybe on average has more equipment, or on average has a little less equipment, or is on average a little stronger, on average a little less strong, or on average a little bit more appetite for the intellectual side, and on average wants to keep it simple. And it goes without saying, this not I'm not trying to toot your horn, but like you and I have a similar target audience on average for, and we do very similar things with very similar platforms. And I will just say, like, you have a wonderful program and a wonderful, you're amazing at programming. And if you're out there listening and you like at all what I do, what Ruth does is wonderful and similar but different. And so you do a wonderful job. And when anytime somebody asks me for like a program like mine, you're definitely on that short list. So you do a tremendous job.
Oh, that is so kind. And I feel exactly the same way about you. So if anyone's listening to this, I know most people who are listening are from Jordan's audience, but some will be from mine. Same to Jordan, 100%. Everything that he just said, would recommend his training, his programming, his coaching with no reservations across the board.
Thank you, thank you. Let's go into it. Let's go into a couple of our topics today. I ask this question to most people because I find it's either a good conversation starter or just like gets us going, which is something that you've changed your mind about over the last 5 to 10 years. And I'm not it doesn't need to be a 180. It can be an evolution that you find has had some impact in what you talk about on social media or what you talk about with your clients or how you program, or it could be anything.
Yeah. The one that popped into mind, I mean, there's a lot, of course, but one of the biggies is taking people into low calorie territory. I used to be very much in the camp of like, don't go below X amount of calories. You're gonna mess up your hormones, you're gonna mess up your mental health, you're gonna mess up everything, all the things, right? And that has evolved a lot. I am absolutely 100% still in the camp of eat as much as you possibly can to achieve the re and still while still receiving the result you want to achieve, right? But that don't go below, 1500 calories, don't ever go below 1200 calories, that whole spiel is not always true for all populations in all scenarios in all phases of fitness. And something that has really changed my mind on this. So, in the last couple of years, for whatever reason, well, I do know the reason, I think. So, I've attracted a little bit more of like a more mature population of women. So, women in their 50s, 60s, 70s. And again, still of my total clientele, still a minority, but a larger population than previously. I think part of that is because I'm a little bit of an old soul, but the other part of it is I think that a woman named Debbie joined like all of my programs 2 years ago. Yeah, just over 2 years ago now. And I'm talking, she joined my weightlifting program, she joined my nutrition programs, and she went all in. She had about 50 pounds to lose. She's 69 years old, or I think she was, I believe she was 67 or 68 when she joined. Now I believe that she is 70 or just turning 70, somewhere in there, right? Had been through the gamut of trying every single thing forever and ever and ever, done all the diets, done all of the popular, like different exercise programs, all of that stuff. And lifting weights and nutritional periodization like absolutely changed everything for her. And she's down like 50 pounds now. Her body is completely transformed. So, and she's very vocal on social media. So I think that's why a lot of that older population has kind of come in the last couple of years. But in working with older populations, specifically women who are maybe in their 50s, 60s, even early 70s, who are less muscled. Like they haven't been lifting weights because of a lot of the, stuff they've been fed in younger years. So they're less active in some scenarios as well. They're in that older population. So once we hit about 60, metabolic rate does start to decrease year after year, right? And that population does tend to have to cut on lower calories. And it's not that there can't be any tweaks or like adjustments that we see over time. For example, back to the example of Debbie. So like the first calorie deficit I took her through, she had to cut on very low calories. I mean, I'm talking it was probably 1200, maybe even below by the end. Her most recent cut, her most recent deficit after moving a lot more, she now moves a lot more and she's built some muscle. She was able to cut on some slightly higher calories. But that being said, like we still had to take her into quote unquote low calorie territory to get the job done, specifically that first time when she was just getting started. So I changed my mind on to wrap it, to bring it all back. Long answer to your short question on essentially not just giving blanket statements on like all populations in all scenarios cannot go below X amount of calories. That's just not true. At least if you want to see results, that's not true.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think I even know who this is just from her, how vocal she is on social media. She's amazing, super inspiring. And it is funny that I have a Debbie in my group who is also, I think, in that age bracket. I think she's 70. Just complete badass, just like unbelievable, inspiring, super inspiring. And it's just funny that I know the Debbie you're talking about, and there's another Debbie that they remind me of each other, and they're both just mega inspiring.
Is your client named Debbie as well, or
Yes.
is she?
Yes.
No way.
They're both Debbies. And she's just like she's like vocal in the group. She's like very active, and so I mean she's just a light of like every time we talk, I'm just like, you are just so inspiring, and you know, a bit of like a hashtag goals scenario for sure. Your
Yeah.
that
Go ahead.
answer, it would be one of my answers as well. And I think one of the things that I think about is that, why have I similarly came to that conclusion? I think what clicked for me ultimately was that there, like, what if you are someone out there who hears that sort of message and you're like, hey, don't go below this amount of calories, and you're a person who's like, okay, well, if I don't go to those calories, I don't lose any weight. Well, then what options do I have? And I used to think that there were options. I used to think, okay, we're gonna reverse diet, we're gonna build up your thing, and it was like, that was the option. It was like, hey, you don't need to go that low, because what we really need to do is do this, you know, intricate microscopic reverse diet to supercharge your metabolism, then we can cut. Like, I used to think that was the alternative, and through enough research on this, that's technically physiologically not a thing. Practically, there are reasons to do that that can have happy endings, but it kind of got to the point where it was like, you there is no, of course you can move more and you can build a little bit of muscle. Those are things. The moving more being the thing that moves the needle a bit more. Like you said, when she started moving more and she had built some muscle, you were able to cut on some higher calories. I'd say predominantly from the moving more part, but a bit of both. I kind of got to the point where I was like, we don't. It seems like we don't really have an option where more calories would work. And so, you know, again, I'm in the same camp as you, because I think this conversation can be not touchy, but I think it can be a little bit triggering. We are not encouraging this idea of like just do as low calories as possible. That's not what we're saying here. But the idea that there's a number that you should not go below, because if you go below that, inherently in all cases, something bad's going to happen to you. That's not true. That doesn't mean you should go as low as possible and nothing bad can happen. But the bad thing that can happen in large part is that you don't sustain it and you end up, maybe you messing with your relationship with food or just not sustaining it or getting into some binge restrict stuff. And so I kind of got to that point where I was like, well, it's not like it's if you want to lose weight, we can't just reverse diet slash jack up your metabolism and then like that. It ultimately ends up being the only option is that we can either move more or we can eat less. And that doesn't mean you should do that, but those are the tools at our disposal.
Right, exactly. Exactly. It all comes down to, okay, well, if that is off the table for you, that is okay. But then you have to accept that so is further fat loss or whatever, And also knowing that just because that's where you may have to visit to lose body fat does not mean you have to live in ultra low calories, right? Just for some people, it does take getting lower to get the ball rolling for, again, could be a variety of reasons. And yeah, that's just the reality. If we want to see progress, that's just one of those things you have to kind of come to acceptance with
What
that.
do you think is a bit of pushback that you, if you get any at all from, or not just pushback, but maybe the hardest thing about either accepting that that's the case or implementing a lower calorie, protocol?
Accepting, I think there's a lot of noise on social media and a lot of, I mean, there is on all in all categories now at this point because everything is getting so saturated. But 1200 calories is for a child, like that kind of thing. Again, we're talking a lot about this. I truly, most people don't have to get that low. Okay. Most people don't, but some people do. And so that's the position that I'm coming from here. So I think that the noise that people hear of and the fear-mongering that that women specifically receive around wrecking your hormones and all of that stuff, I think is where there can be some pushback. And then what was your other question? If what tends to
Yeah, the
be
hardest part about maybe implementing that, if you are with somebody who gets to the point where they're open to doing that and they're in that like sub 1400 calorie range, what are some of the hurdles they face outside of, maybe an obvious one of like, that's, I'm hungry, or whatever.
right. I mean, I would say that's the big is well, it kind of sucks. And that's true, It's true, like when you're in low calories and it's very little, you're hungry. You are hungry. And so I would say that's the biggest drawback. So it's just looking at those ways of how can we mitigate that as much as humanly possible. We can't get rid of it altogether. We can't get rid of it altogether, but how can we make sure we're really pushing the high volume foods? How can we make sure that the levers that we are pulling to get you into that deficit are the ones that are going to make you less hungry if possible? For example, I find that that tends to be steps for most people. Of course, like a calorie deficit is a calorie deficit. So at some point, you're going to feel hunger. I tend, and this is purely, I've not done research on this, so I'm curious what you think, Jordan, on this topic. But for example, cardio versus steps. I find, and you're getting into cardio lately, correct? A
Correct.
little bit more? Yes. So I think you've been like running and doing all this stuff. I tend to find with clients that cardio tends to make people hungrier than steps. And it's not a one-to-one ratio by any means of like the same amount of cardio burns the same amount of calories. Do we know exactly how many each are burning? No, but I tend to have better results in terms of hunger mitigation when I'm pulling the step lever versus throwing a lot of cardio at people, specifically if they do have to be on low calories from a hunger perspective. I'm curious your thoughts.
No, I definitely feel similarly. I think the weight of the evidence would show that intensity, an intense cardio session, if you equate for steps or calories burned, again, it's not everyone. There's like difference from individual differences, but for some people, we see short-term appetite suppression after high-intensity cardio, but long-term appetite increase. I think that that's probably the experience most people will have is like after a really, really hard workout, people struggle to eat immediately. They feel like, okay, I mean, exercise is a mild appetite suppressant technically, but if you do a lot of high-intensity cardio or like you said, equating for steps or calories, the higher the intensity, I'd bet, not everyone, but I'd bet on a bit more of a hunger response. I feel like here's something I've been thinking about, and you tell me if this makes some sense, which is like I go into a deficit, 20% deficit. Let's say right now, let's say my maintenance calories is 4,000 calories, and I go into a 20% calorie deficit. That's an 800 calorie deficit. I'm making up, let's say your maintenance is 2,000. You go into a 20% deficit. That's a 400 calorie deficit. We both have 20% less food. And physiologically, we're in the same place where we are in the same sort of a deficit. So physiologically, again, if we just imagine that we're the same person genetics wise, outside of just size wise, we're feeling similarly uncomfortable from a just physiology, just not having enough energy. I still find it's harder for the smaller person on less calories. And I find that harder. It can't be because they are technically more uncomfortable because they are in technically have a greater physiological stress. They don't. It's the same, right? Then that's the point of the hypothetical. It's like, but it's still harder. Now, and why is it harder? In my opinion, it's harder because society has built up standards of portions that you will have to change more than I will. And so like, I'm just coming up with this a little bit on the fly here, but like all of the sizes of plates, your sizes of your plate does not change. And mine's the same. We eat off the same plate. You go to a restaurant, you order a meal. It's the same size as my meal. You know, in movies and all the stimuli, the way we grew up, the size of portions, like what is a portion of meat? What is a portion of plants or pasta or whatever? Like it's not that my portion is always 50% more than yours, or 100% more. I have 100% more calories. And so if I go to, I'm going to have to make less modifications on like traditional portion sizes. And I still might be able to eat something that you look at and you're like, that's a full meal. Like I might still look at a meal in my deficit and think that's at least like feels like a reasonable meal. But the word reasonable references like some abstract standard that I've built up of what's reasonable. And the differences are you and me might have a similar idea of what's reasonable, and I just don't have to modify it as much. It's like my wife and I are in a deficit and we want ice cream sandwiches. The ice cream sandwiches are the same size. And so she might be able to only have half. And so not only be able to, you guys understand the phrasing here. I'm not saying that she can do whatever she wants. You can do whatever you want. But again, if we go out to eat, like I might be able to just eat the meal off the menu. She might have to make a modification. And if we lived in a world where we sit down at a restaurant, she orders a burger and fries, I order a burger and fries, and hers comes perfectly portioned for her calories. So the size of the plate, the size of the fork, the size of the burger, the size of the portion of fries, the size of the drink, it all came at 50%, let's say, because it's just 50% calories. It might feel less like you've made a larger restriction or you've restricted more. And I find that to be tough for women, especially who are, let's say we are still talking about, this goes for the whole continuum of more and less calories, but specifically people on less than 1500 calories. The minute you're on less than 1500 calories, your 20% deficit and my 20% deficit, they're just not the same. You know, like I can have a normal portion of a food and make some less modifications, even if we're under the same technical physiological stress. Does that make sense?
Yes. Oh, that's so interesting. That's so interesting, bringing in kind of like the cultural implications as well. And as what I'm kind of hearing you say is like portion sizes are a little bit, they're made a little bit more for men. You know, that's kind of where maybe that's one of the conclusions you could come to potentially from that. But I think that that is super interesting. And Jordan, I have not thought of it that way before in terms of like size of plates, just the culturally accepted size of portions that we have in society does tend to be on the bigger side and does tend to lean towards like once someone is eating below a certain calorie amount, it just looks weird. It looks like I'm eating nothing type of thing. Of course, you can adjust to a certain extent with volume, but that is so interesting. And I do think that even from your description that you just went over right there, portion sizes, the size of all of, you know, plates and restaurants and all those different things may just be a little bit more geared towards higher calories, towards men. in some ways, you know?
Yeah, there's something psychologically different about having half of a burger than having a smaller burger. And I think that if it was like looked like, I know this is like a microcosm of what I'm saying, was like if you got that burger and it was a full circle bun with all the same ingredients, it was just everything a little smaller. I think there's something psychologically different than having that burger, cutting it in half, asking the waiter to bring over a box to take home half. Like that's just a different experience, I think.
Yeah. You know, on that note, I love a mini. I love, because you're right. There's something about having a whole thing, even if it's smaller. It's like I love the mini ice, those little mini ice cream cones, like those from
The
Trader
Trader
Joe's,
Joe's ones? Yeah.
Trader
Yeah.
Joe's. Hold the cone. Love
Yes. Yeah.
those. I love stuff like that where it is. It's like we've adjusted it for you, but it still looks like you're getting the whole thing. Or packages that are kind of even like the little half chomp sticks. And that's crazy because it's literally the same. It's literally just the stick cut in half, you know? But it's in its own package. And for whatever reason, that can kind of do something to the brain.
Yeah, totally. I want to do a pivot because I want to make sure we have time for this as our main topic today, which is
Yeah.
I'm gonna let you take the mic and run with it for a second. I'll leave you with you made a post. I asked you, hey, what's something you're feeling passionate about? You said, hey, this is a thing that I've been thinking about for a while. And what I believe to be the kind of the summation, the philosophy of that post was this idea of what slash how much slash when will it ever feel like enough from a fitness or body comp or muscle or leanness perspective. And so talk me through that reels that you made and just how you've been feeling about this topic.
Yeah. Well, I think that reel specifically was kind of like, hey, I've been in maintenance for a couple of years. Where you tend to be as a coach does tend to be where you get the most questions on, and people are like, how have you done this specific thing? Right? That's just the nature of it, especially if you're sharing things on social media. So I get a lot of questions about maintenance. I talk a lot about it. Of course, like I have clients that are, you know, so many clients that aren't in maintenance. But that's where I'm at. So I feel like I talk about it a lot. So it kind of stemmed from getting questions and people being like, how do I get to this place where I can be in maintenance and be happy with it and actually sit there for years type of thing? Because that is, I think, a desire of so many people. Specifically, I work with women. So many women's heart is to get to that place. And the reel was really going over, I've been in maintenance for 2 years, but it doesn't mean I don't still have goals. It doesn't mean I'm sitting here and being like, I have arrived. There's nothing else that I want to achieve. And so now I am 100% perfectly content because I am the perfect human specimen. You know, it's not that at all. And yet, I am extremely content. I love my life. I am very confident and happy in the physique that I do have. So the post was really going into like a lot of you could be there too if you just decided it's enough. If you decided where you have come so far is enough. Not that you'll never have another goal again in the future. Not that you now think that you have arrived and that you are perfect and whatever, but that what you have done thus far is enough, and that you can just kind of like bask, allow yourself to bask in that for a little while. And to be clear, like this really is a conversation. I'm more so speaking towards those women who are maybe in a camp of like wanting to lose the last five, wanting to lose the last 10, that sort of population, right? Not necessarily, I mean, we could apply this to a lot of different populations for sure, but specifically the women who have been probably in health and fitness for some time. And they're just always like, man, every time I reach a thing, there's another thing. And then I reach that thing, and there's one more thing. And there's always this like, you can always be reaching for one more thing until you decide, hey, it's okay if I settle down for a little bit. It's okay to be content with where I've come so far. So I think that's where it kind of stemmed from. And yeah, I think it resonated. I think that for a lot of my clients specifically, we have those sorts of conversations a lot. I am not anti big goal. Love a big goal. If you want to get super lean, super muscular, we can, you know, talk about the trade-offs that that's going to require, but I am very much a coach who is on board with try it. Sure, try it, see if it's worth it. But then have seasons, long seasons after you've been in health and fitness for a while, where you just decide it's enough. I can be at maintenance for a while. I can be in a routine. I don't have to be chasing massive gains. Not like we're not always kind of chasing gains, right? Because, but I don't have to be chasing fat loss in this season. I can be okay and be happy with and content with where I've come so far.
I love that, and I'm going to do something terrible to you, which is ask you a really hard question, which is
Oh my God.
why is that so hard?
Why? Oh, Jordan, that is very layered. Yeah. I think it's hard. Oh, man. I think it's hard for a lot of different reasons. I think that as humans, we are kind of wired to continually want to improve. And I think some personalities want that even more than others, like the achiever type personality. I'm an Enneagram 3, so like I'm right in that kind of personality type of more and more, like, great, let me beat myself, do a little better all the time. So I think that's part of it. I think sometimes it kind of comes from and stems from that obsession with fitness and health. And I think a lot of times, not always, again, this is very layered. But I see that happen out of a discontent in other areas of life at times where we're struggling with relationships, we're struggling with control in another area of life where we feel like everything is falling apart and this is the part that we can control. And again, fitness and health can be very visual as well. So it can look very much like I've got it all together on the outside if I can be the fittest, if I can be the best in this area. Even though something else is potentially falling apart over here. And I think that sometimes it doesn't even have to be falling apart. I think that sometimes if we're lacking other stuff going on, like if we don't have hobbies, if we don't have friends, if we don't have community, and we love health and fitness, it can be easy to only ever have that to focus on. And then that's the only thing that we're constantly trying to improve in. And we're constantly, it's kind of like, 100% of our life versus the whatever smaller percentage it really should be. So I think that's some of it. What would you say?
No, I mean, you killed it. I'm gonna try to summarize what you said in a few bullet points. And so for the listener, this is not me having this is these might sound like they're on point. You might be like, oh yeah, great, but that's just because I'm trying to summarize the beautiful explanation you just gave. And so the 4 points I heard you say, the first was some sort of innate pursuit of progression, where it's just like in us to feel rewarded, to get some sorts of dopamine from doing better, from seeing improvement. There's something in us. I think we can all connect with that on some level, where there is like an independent variable of it's fun to see this thing grow or see this thing improve. The second is some sort of societal expectation meeting and obsession with how we look. I think there's, if that, like, and the reason I would put that on there is because if we turned that down, I think all of a sudden there'd be a weight off of people's shoulders. Not entirely off. I don't think your aesthetic goals would go away. But I think if all of a sudden as a society we just weren't so obsessed with what we looked like, then you might find yourself more easily to get to that place of content with the way you look, the way you feel, how strong you are, how much muscle you have. The third one I think I'll throw in here, this is the only one that I would throw in, is a misunderstanding of where the health benefits come from. And so I think there's an element of, like, if you knew that the vast majority of the health benefits come from like your first 60 to 90 minutes a week of lifting weights, maybe all of them, and that you do, the physique that would build isn't even rem is not like what you think of when you think of like fit, strong, healthy person, because in your mind it's some AI generated, photoshopped, airbrushed fitness influencer in perfect lighting, and you're like, yeah, but you can achieve health on much less than that. And the health benefits of resistance training can be met with a physique that doesn't, in your mind, look like losing the last 5 pounds and having ab veins. And so I think, people think, oh, I need to get really jacked or really lean, then I'm going to be the health, then I'll get the health benefits of all this. It's like, no, you probably already have them with 1 hour of lifting a week, 2 times a week, 30 to 45 minutes. You probably have, if not all of them. If I was more bullish, I'd say all of them, but I'll keep the door open. And so I think that that's important as well. People are like, oh, I have to run I have to run a marathon to get the health benefits of cardio. It's like you could probably get most of them in, again, 75 to 150 minutes a week, right? So I think people just have a misunderstanding of what health from exercise looks like. And then the last one, which I'm going to underscore because it is where I'm where it's there's a reason I asked you another question in our notes, which about hobbies, which was filling a void slash some sense of control slash not having other interests. And I do not want to shame anyone near, nor do you, I'm sure, about not having other interests. I mean, if all of your emotional eggs are in one basket and that thing gets really hard or isn't going perfectly, then it will impact just how you feel about everything. And you know, I want to ask you a follow-up now. You know, I'll pause for a second and see if you feel that's a decent summation of where you were with that.
Yeah, I think that was excellent. Love a bullet list. Love a summary. That was perfect.
Cool. Let's talk about how to know if, you know, I think what we're talking about here is how is this intersection between feeling content and having goals. Like, can I do both of those things, right? How do I know if the big goal or the goal I have is taking me closer to feeling good or taking me further from feeling good? How do I know that that goal is serving me?
Well, I think to some extent, you do have to try it to know that. Because I think that sometimes people will have this goal in their mind. Ex again, back to the example of the last 5, the last 10 pounds, which, you know, so many women have. Like, if I could just see 5 pounds less on the scale consistently, that I promise you, like, I would be content and happy to maintain forever. 10 pounds less, whatever. So I think what I will not always, but sometimes encourage clients to do is, okay, well, then try it. Well, then let's try. And I will help you try. And potentially, you know, you're already lean. You want to get leaner. Okay, well, it's going to take some sacrifice, but let's try it. Let's see if it's worth it. And I think so much of, I mean, I think to really know if that goal is serving you do kind of have to try it and see how it feels. And in a couple of ways, see how it feels mentally. Does it suddenly become something that you have to be thinking about 90% of your day to really like achieve the benefit that you want to achieve from it, you know? So yeah, I think that is, I will encourage clients to do that, you know, if they're talking about a goal for a long time and they're not doing anything about it and they're not content and I'm like, okay, well, either we have to figure out a way for you to be good with where you're at now, or let's just try it and let's see how it feels. And then from there, you can make an informed decision going forward of, is this worth it? Is it worth the effort, or is it not? Does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, I'm a big advocate for try it. A huge advocate for that. And I think like some larger than you might think percentage of what I do with coaching one-on-one, I'm sure you do this too. I'm not speaking directly to you, speaking just in general, of is helping people find out where on the level of trade-offs do things become not worth it anymore. I'm like, let's take it hard. Let's go hard. Let's go hard on lifting and strength and fat loss, whatever you want to do. And then at some point you'll see the list of trade-offs and think, nah, I don't want to go there. And so I think that it's super a great, you made it a wonderful point, which is like, let's try it. You might be right. You might be right that the last 5 to 10 pounds like mean something to you. You might be wrong. And I think that there's a beauty in finding that out. I will say there's also, you know, depends on the goal, but like let's say the goal of lose the last 5 pounds and keep it off forever and ride off into the sunset with a life you love and those pounds forever gone. I'm not saying it never works out, but I would say that it's th that I maybe I'm jaded, maybe I'm just over the course of time that feels less likely often. Do you find that less likely? I don't ever want to put that on my clients where I'm like, I bet you this doesn't work out and we're gonna have to figure out a way to be content. I don't want to do that. And I don't do that. And I don't feel that way, really. I don't. I'm very open-ended and excited to help. But how do you feel that if that's what happens, what's that like for the client? What's that like for you?
I agree with you, Jordan. I think, again, I never go into it being like, let's try it, but you're gonna fail, you know, like you're not gonna like it. I don't go in with that coaching like mentality either. What I will say, I find that the clients that have more of the mindset of let's try it as well, sometimes it actually is worth it. The clients that are extremely, extremely attached to it, there's a number that they're so attached to, and they're like, listen, I promise. Like, if I could just be here, I will be happy. You know, that's where I find it's not going to be enough. It's not going to be enough, potentially for one of those reasons we were talking about before, right? So I think the people who can hold it with a loose hand at the beginning, they're like, man, I just feel like I'd feel better in my clothes, 5 pounds, 10 pounds down, whatever it is. And I would love to try it. And if the trade-offs aren't worth it, I'm good with it, but I'd like to try it. I think people who go in with that mentality are more likely to potentially be able to maintain that with, and also like maintain contentment and being happy with where they're at and it's enough and all of those things. The person who goes in who is extremely, extremely attached to it, and it's like kind of almost like a life or not life or death, but it's a very big deal. It's a very, very big deal to them. I think that even if they reach it, they're able to maintain it, they're gonna find something else. They're gonna find something else, and it's never gonna be enough.
I want to caveat that I think if you're a person who's not, let's say you're not in, I don't, this is very vague and subjective, but I'm going to say it this way and just let me off the hook for a sec. It's like if you're not in great shape, you know, whatever that means to you, you think you're in such a physical shape that it's making your life a little bit worse in some way. Like whatever that means, you're in bad cardiovascular shape, you're not strong enough, you feel you're overweight in a way that impacts your life. I do think that the goal of getting fit and in better shape can absolutely be a thing that once you have it is awesome. You know, like it, to go, we're talking a bit about those goals that go one step beyond that. So if you're sitting here and you're like, hey, I just started working out and I'm maybe a little overweight, my diet's not great. Are you guys saying that I won't actually be happier once I am fitter and healthier? We're not saying that. I think you very likely can be going from not in great shape to in better shape. I believe wholeheartedly in the quality of life improvements that happen with that. We're talking about maybe what happens when you have a, when you're already in whatever, you're fit, trying to get fitter, with some sort of like, I am already in a decent spot trying to go for something extra. The thing that's stuck in my mind, and I don't know how true it is, but I'm going to say it and we'll bounce it around, is, because what we're talking about here is how do I know if shooting for this thing will actually be all it's cracked up to be? And the thing that I'm would bounce around is a question. And the question is, will it be the thing that finally makes me happy if I can't find a way to have fun while I'm working on it? You know, and if I don't like, if the is it possible that it can be the thing that makes you happy if you have, if you to have can find no way to enjoy the process. I don't know. What do you think?
Can it be fun, or can it make you happy? Can it be the thing if you're not enjoying the process? Is that the question?
Yeah, I will add a couple words because I don't think like being in a deep deficit and like doing it, like I don't think that has to be like all-encompassing fun, but will it be the thing that finally makes me happy if I can't find a way to have fun while I'm working on it? Any kind of fun, some kind of fun, some kind of enjoyment along the way.
I mean, no. I would say unequivocally no. I don't think it can make, and again, I don't think fitness alone can make you happy, well-rounded, happy anyways. Does it improve quality of life? Like all the things you just said too, especially to a certain level, can it really improve a lot of things in your life? Absolutely. So put that caveat in there as well. But to answer your question, no, I don't think if you can't maintain that level of whatever it is you want to maintain, whether it's the six pack, whether it's the super defined delts, whether it's the exact scale weight, if you can't maintain that and also be li enjoying the process and living a life you enjoy in that process, if it's like you wake up and you dread that cardio you've got to do, you dread the amount of steps you're going to have to do that day. You dread the meal prep that you have prepped for yourself. I don't think, no, that that's going to, I think you have to have, there has to be that level of fun. Yes.
Yeah, I think any goal that starts with I'll be happy when, outside of the one we're talking about where it's like, okay, you get into better shape such that your quality of life skyrockets because you can move better and you can, engage in the social activities you want. I'm with that. I'm with that. We're talking about like do that first pull up, and that doesn't mean when I say that I'll be happy when, that doesn't mean it won't be cool that I can do X or it won't be fun that I can do X. That's totally true. But if it's really in your heart of hearts feeling like the goal that I have, the sentence that I think of in my mind is I'll be happy when I lose the last 5 pounds. I finally see that definition. I fit into this old pair of clothing. Like, I think that's something to talk about. I'm not coming at you and saying that it's not possible, but I think if that's the way you phrase it, it doesn't mean that it can't be fun, that thing you can't enjoy, that you won't enjoy when you can do that first pull-up, or you enjoy when you see that first bit of definition. Like, that's not what I mean. I think it, like you said, it's if you have all of your emotional eggs, if there's a lot of consequence riding on this thing, that's something to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think you wrap that up nicely. I would agree.
Cool. Let's talk about a very, very relevant topic, which is hobbies. What's a hobby or interest or something that you love outside of health and fitness? And how do you feel like it ties into this whole discussion of happiness, let's say?
Ooh, of happiness, of overall happiness. Well, let's talk hobbies because I think this is a good conversation in that it doesn't always have to be like, oh, if I am not a super multifaceted human, if I don't have a million things going on, then I'm for sure gonna like overemphasize fitness and I'm gonna get obsessed. It's really, I've found that it is really not that. I love reading, love it. Read every night, all types of reading. I love like Christian living books. I love self-development, but here's the deal. I'm a big fiction girly. Love fiction. It's so enjoyable. I do it again pretty much every single day, read every single day, every night for the most part. There are other hobbies too, but I'm gonna kind of zero in on this one. Even just this one, when I re-picked this up, because I grew up loving to read, and then I would say, oh man, maybe four-ish. Oh, this is something that's changed maybe in the last 4 years, Jordan. We just pinpointed something from the beginning. So maybe last four-ish years, I re-picked it up, rediscovered my love specifically for fiction, for just like getting lost in a different world and stories and all of that fun stuff. And even just that, I truly saw positive impacts on my relationship with food. An example of this would be I used to struggle earlier on in my health and fitness journey with kind of like closing the kitchen at night, with after I was done eating, not still thinking like, oh, but maybe I should snack on something else, or like kind of thinking about the ice cream in the freezer and being going back and forth. Do I want it? Do I not? Da, 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 like all this stuff. And I found that when I had something other than food to put in my evening to that I was looking forward to, it really helped me kind of like close the kitchen and move on to my next activity, this thing that I was looking forward to that I really enjoyed. And so that's just a small thing. It's not my only hobby, but I don't have a ton of hobbies. I also love travel. I love doing outdoor stuff. I love biking. I love fixing up our fixer upper. But I would say the one that that sticks out in this conversation is reading, because I really did see it specifically when I introduced it actually very positively impact my fitness journey, specifically from that like evening routine perspective.
Yeah, the interesting thing is you and I both, well, I'll speak for me, that fitness was like my first and only hobby for a long time. Maybe it wasn't, maybe there were some tangential things. I really like soccer or whatever, but it was the first thing where I was like deriving a lot of enjoyment from it. And so now later in life, it's almost like to improve my quality of life, I'm seeking to diversify outside of fitness, but I want to be, which I'm sure you'll agree with, I want to be conscious of the person who is finding fitness later, and actually fitness is that thing that is helping them diversify. And it's become this really fun intellectual, not like intellectual, it's got to be nerdy, but thing that you look forward to that is new for you. And it's actually the kind of just the inverse of what we're talking about. We are saying, okay, we've been in fitness for so long. Actually, one of the things that's helping our relationship with it is to make it not the only thing that we are deriving our identity from and happiness from. But we work with people every day who come to fitness a little bit later, and fitness is that thing for them, and it's awesome. That's so awesome. It absolutely can be, and we know it because we lived it for a very, 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 very long time. And I love that you said it doesn't have to be this big, serious thing. I think people think like you need to have another like expertise on something. You have to be like very into something else. Like some people are just juggling like being a parent and like putting food on the table and going to work, and the fact that they exercise is this immense cherry on top. And now they're like, well, Jordan and Ruth would say, I also have to be like a chess wizard or something, you know? And we're not saying that. We're not saying that. It could be something like reading, you know, it could be something like, you know, my dad loves birding. I think of his hobbies. He's like a, you know, outside of his work, he's always loved birding, and then tries to get me into, I come home one day and he's like, I got you this bird feeder and here's the book and you learn. So, you know, I think that very gently, without putting too much pressure, because we're both cognizant of that. Like there's so much pressure to do everything right now that I want to encourage people to diversify and have things, just things plural, that they derive enjoyment from, identity from, without putting so much pressure on that you need to be like, again, you need to be some chess wizard and you need to be like super deep into like 50 different things. Like, listen, man, like life is hard. We're trying to do the basics, and if there's room for more, then that's great. I just wanted to put that caveat because I think we come from fitness and now diversifying is helping us, where other people are coming from are finding fitness later, and actually fitness is that thing that's making them feel the way we might feel about, you know, certain other hobbies. So I
Yeah,
really like that.
I love that perspective. And that's honestly something that I really appreciate about you, Jordan, is having the ability to see health and fitness and topics in general from so many different perspectives and being so nuanced in your conversation. So appreciate that. And I think that was such like a perfect example of that, because you're right. Yes, I feel the exact same. When I first found fitness, it was running on my like gravel back roads as a teenager, you know? And that was the hobby. It was something that I looked forward to and enjoyed, and it still is. Like fitness, I would say to some extent, still is a bit of a hobby for me. Absolutely, it's something I look forward to. It's something that I enjoy. It really enhances my life. So I think that that's a really interesting point and an important caveat. Now, that's not to say even when you're starting, it should be your only thing, but it makes more sense of when you're starting that it might feel that it might be more of like you might have more of like the new hobby sensations around it versus when you get later on, you know, when you get a year, 5 years, 10 years down the road. But really back, I mean, to the whole hobby conversation, to kind of bottom line it a little bit. Back to what you were saying about it doesn't have to be, you don't have to become a chess champion. You don't have to like get super good at the guitar. You could if that's what you want to do. But you're right. Like so many people were already so busy. The idea of having to add five more things or become a professional at even one more thing sounds overwhelming. And I totally get that. So I would say one thing, like start with one, you know, if you can look at your life and you're like, the only thing that I do is work, take care of my kids, and fitness, and then Netflix. Maybe think of introducing one thing. And, you know, I'm just gonna plug reading a little bit. I think reading is very low barrier to entry because it doesn't take any skill. I mean, not really. As long as you know how to read, it doesn't take any skill.
Hey, don't be mean. No. I think reading is a great one too. I think you're tr double triple whammying on like reducing screen time at night. I mean, it's just like the so many things are better. The reading is so much better for your brain than so many of the other things you might be doing with that time. What you said fiction, but what are some of your like subgenres within fiction that your go-to here? You're making a face.
Just romance.
My Jenna is like a Jenna cracks me up because she's like she'll always be like she'll be like self-deprecating about like intellectual stuff sometimes, and then she'll be like, oh, I can't figure that out. But then like I'll turn around and she's like, oh, I just finished these three books in the last like 4 days, and I'm like, what? Like she's like, yeah, I just read through these three books, and I'm like, if you find something that you enjoy reading, like it becomes something that just like not that going faster is better, but that you can, yeah, that you can sink a lot of time into in a good way.
Right, you can absolutely gobble them up. And
Yeah.
she does a lot of fantasy, right? So those are like,
She does
or
a lot of like somebody got murdered and there's people having sex probably, and like it's probably good. Those are probably happening not necessarily at the same time in the book, but those are probably both happening throughout the book, based on the titles of the books and just like the what the book looks like. And that's a uninformed opinion, but that's my guess.
got you, got you. I do love a kind of like murder mystery as well. I love that for specifically for a vacation because I can't, a thriller, essentially, I can't put them down. That's my problem. And I don't need anything keeping me from sleep because I tend to struggle with sleep a little bit anyways. So basically, like if I'm just reading that on the regular at home, that means I'm staying up all night to finish it, you know? And so I don't need that for myself. So when I am just at home, like I need my wind down read at night. I typically am more of like the sweet rom-com genre really serves me well for that. Vacation, travel, thrillers. If I can sit on a beach and just read for like 4 hours straight, love that. I would, you know, give me a thriller, I will gobble that up. And then I would say I sprinkle in, love some historical fiction, love an actual like memoir, that kind of thing, and then kind of like personal development, some Christian living, that kind of thing. I sprinkle that in terms of like in my enjoyable reading.
Not to take a more serious turn of, I think that's a really good point of, when we're thinking about like nighttime routine, the word stimulation feels like the antithesis of what you should be doing. So like lights and sounds and, but if you're like, to me at least, there is a subjective, fully subjective difference between watching Stranger Things or watching Love is Blind. Like if we watch Love is Blind, I'm asleep within 1 minute. If we watch Stranger Things, like I'll watch the entire episode. If we watch Game of Thrones, I'll be awake the entire episode. If we're watching Traitors, I'm asleep within 45 seconds. And so, and I feel like with books, I'm not, you know, listen, if you're reading a book, you're already winning. Read the most crazy book you want. That's probably better than any form of TV. But I do think you're pointing at something where you're like, hey, like there's probably a type of book that's best for that nighttime routine, and a thriller for you is something that you might be up all night reading.
Right, I have no self-control. Exactly. Yeah, no, I get what you're saying with the TV shows too. 'Cause again, back to me struggling with sleep a little bit, and actually like we're not getting into this, but I have like hardcore struggled with actual full-on insomnia for years. And so have tried so many different things with evening routines and all of the stuff, right? What's working for me right now is very much not, it's not like the go-to advice, but it's watching a mindless show to put myself to sleep because I will read and that helps me a lot. That helps like bring things down. But then I have to be lulled to sleep by something. So yeah, but it has to be a very specific show. It has to be so boring. And I just turn the brightness all the way down. The blue light is just gonna have to like it is what it is.
Dude, brightness all the way down. I got another dude, brightness. Jenna kills me. She'll come downstairs, she'll go to the bathroom and come back, and I've turned the brightness down to the point where like she's like, you don't have to turn the color down and the like sharpness down. I'm like, no, everything on zero. I'm like, I wanna, and it's funny, it's like if you catch a TV show that has like Stranger Things, or I remember like watching like Ozarks, like the show is on a baseline level of lighting where like it's already really dark, and I just remember watching multiple episodes of Stranger Things where I'm like, I ain't got no idea what's going on, like screen is completely black. Like it's like Jeff is that's funny that you mentioned that. I think, dude, I think screen brightness plus blue blockers plus not too stimulating a show is not the worst thing in the world. I think that that is something that, if you, first of all, if you're watching TV at night, step one is just turn the brightness down on the TV. Like you it's we're not in a hotel here where the brightness is on like full blast. You know what's funny, that on a hotel I have that bug up my butt where like we get to a hotel, if we're, I don't remember the last time I was in a hotel, but you like can't turn the brightness down. I'm like, great, Like, gonna be up literally all night if we turn this TV on.
Yes. Oh, that's so true. Yeah, that makes a huge difference. I'm the same way where, but you have to adjust it like little by little, right? Because when you're first getting used to it, you adjust down a little bit and a little bit. And then eventually you drop that sucker all the way down. You can barely see it.
Test this on your TV. Test this on your TV, listener, and you as well. It's also funny because, okay, so you know how, like, we've descended into the part of the podcast where we're just waffling about nonsense, but it is like everything about media is about your getting your attention and stimulation and keeping your attention, keep your attention. And one of those things is the brightness. Check this on your TV. My TV has a 50 level brightness, starts at 50. From 50 to 10, it changes almost nothing. If you go from 50 to 10, it's almost nothing. And every time you go 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, it gets very dark. And that is on purpose, meant for you to keep it as bright and just be like, oh, I turned the brightness down halfway and nothing changes. It's like, you cannot tell. And I always feel, I feel so manipulated. And I'm like, dude, going from 50 to 11, it's the same. And then from 10 to 0, then I finally get some change. And I'm like, those, like, that's them trying to keep the brightness high to keep you watching, you know, which is whatever. Maybe I have a tinfoil hat on right now, but I don't think I do. I think that that's like a pretty standard approach of trying to keep your attention.
Yes, let it be known. This is Jordan's top conspiracy. The brightness on TV is trying to keep you watching. That I don't, I'm not surprised by that. Okay, this whole thing, I watch it on my phone at night. Like I literally am like on my bed, laying sideways. My phone is propped up on my water bottle on my nightstand, and that's how I go to sleep because we don't have a TV in our room. So, but I believe you. So in terms of like your actual TV having a hard time getting super low, that's interesting.
All right, let's circle it back. Let's do the classic podcast outro where you tell people where they can find you and plug things and, you know, do us a bit of a sign off.
All right. Thank you so much. This has been so good. You can find me on Instagram at Ruth underscore MPOWER, empower without the E. My website is ruthempower.com. I have three main offers at the moment. My nutrition program, Total Recomp, brings you through how to track, how to lose fat, how to maintain, how to mindful eat, and how to build. So it is genuinely everything in nutritional periodization. Yeah, that's Total Recomp. My weightlifting membership is built to last. That's for women's body recomp as well. And then I do have one-on-one coaching spots. I actually have one-on-one coaching spots available now for the first time in quite a while. So you
Sweet.
can connect with me in any of those ways as well.
Sweet. Thanks so much for coming on, Ruth. Always great chatting.
Thanks, Jordan.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram at Jordan Lips Fitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.